All right. Today we're diving into some pretty heavy stuff. We're talking about the Biden administration seriously considering preemptive pardons for officials who might be targeted. You know, if Trump wins back the presidency, we're going to explore why this is even on the table, who might be involved, and the ethical and legal hot water it could create. Then we'll shift gears to the wave of criticism Dr. Fauci is facing, especially from the around his role in the COVID-19 pandemic. Remember, we're here to help you make sense of this, not tell you what to think.
Right. It's a fascinating time in American politics. You know, we're essentially looking at the potential for a presidential revenge tour, and that's raising all sorts of questions we've never really had to grapple with before.
Yeah. Okay, so let's unpack this preemptive pardon situation. It's not just about pardons being controversial, is that we're talking about pardons for things that haven't even happened yet.
Yeah.
I mean, is there any historical precedent for this?
It's truly uncharted territory. Presidential pardons have always been a bit of a lightning rod, but they've typically been used after a conviction or at least an indictment. This idea of preemptively pardoning people for potential future crimes, That's a whole different ballgame. Imagine the implications if a president could pardon anyone they wanted preemptively for actions that might not even be illegal yet. It could fundamentally change how power operates in this country.
Right. And it's not like these potential recipients are publicly campaigning for a pardon. One source, a well-connected Democrat, was quoted saying, "The beneficiaries know nothing."
That sounds more like a backroom deal than a legal process. What's the Biden administration so afraid of?
Well, there's genuine fear of what a second Trump administration might do. I mean, think about it. Trump recently appointed Kash Patel, a staunch loyalist with a history of pushing conspiracy theories, to head the FBI. And Patel has openly said he wants to investigate Trump's critics.
Yeah, that's a chilling thought.
But couldn't preemptive pardons backfire? Wouldn't it look like an admission of guilt? And could it embolden Trump supporters even more?
Well, those are legitimate concerns, and there's a lot of debate about that right now, even within the Democratic Party. But this fear of retaliation is very real.
Right. And this fear ties directly to some of the names being mentioned as potential recipients of these pardons, like Liz Cheney. She broke with her party to oppose Trump, and now she's seen as a prime target for revenge.
Yeah, exactly. And you've got other names on that potential list, too. Adam Schiff, who was the key figure in Trump's first impeachment, and surprisingly, Dr. Fauci. They've all been incredibly critical of Trump, and they've become symbols of resistance to his agenda.
I was surprised to see Dr. Fauci's name on that list. I mean, he's a doctor, not a politician. What makes him a target?
Well, remember, Dr. Fauci became the face of the government's COVID-19 response. And for many on the right, he represents everything they dislike about government overreach and mandates. We'll delve into those criticisms in more detail later, but it's important to see how these threads connect.
So it's not just political payback we're talking about here. There are serious legal and financial repercussions for these individuals, even if they're never actually charged with a crime.
That's right. Even the threat of a politically motivated investigation could be devastating. Think of it this way. It's like giving someone a get-out-of-jail-free card before they've even played the game. It throws the whole system off balance. We're in uncharted legal territory. And it raises a lot of uncomfortable questions about fairness and due process.
So what are the arguments for and against preemptive pardons? I imagine there's a lot of internal debate about how to handle this.
There is. You have people like Senator Ed Markey who argue that these pardons are necessary to protect individuals from Trump's potential abuse of power. They believe it's an emergency measure to safeguard democracy.
And on the other side of the debate,
You have voices like Congressman Adam Schiff, who remember might actually be on that list of potential pardon recipients, saying it's a dangerous precedent. He believes it would undermine the rule of law and make the president appear above the law.
So you have this intense debate playing out, and it's not just abstract legal theory. These are real people with real lives and careers that are hanging in the balance.
Yeah, it's a high stakes situation, and it's a stark reminder of how divided our nation is right now.
Okay, so we've got this preemptive pardon drama unfolding, and then we've got this other storm brewing around Dr. Fauci.
Yeah.
What are the main criticisms he's facing, and where are they coming from?
Well, the criticisms are coming primarily from they're incredibly intense. They go far beyond simply disagreeing with his policies.
So it's not just about lockdowns or mask mandates.
No, it's much deeper than that. These these critics see Dr. Fauci as a symbol of everything they distrust about the government and what they perceive as an overreach of authority during the pandemic. They're accusing him of serious misconduct,
yes.
Even calling for his prosecution.
That's a pretty dramatic escalation. What specifically are they accusing him of?
Well, the criticisms fall into three main buckets. First, there are the allegations about Dr. Fauci's role in gain-of-function research at the Wuhan lab. Essentially, gain-of-function research involves manipulating viruses to study their potential to become more transmissible or deadly. These critics are alleging that Dr. Fauci funded research that led to the creation of the COVID-19 virus and that this research was the source of the pandemic.
And the second bucket of criticism.
That revolves around the COVID-19 vaccines. Critics like Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who has a long history of promoting anti-vaccine conspiracy theories, are claiming that Dr. Fauci pushed untested vaccines on the public and that these vaccines are dangerous and ineffective. They're drawing a direct link between the vaccines and a supposed increase in chronic diseases in children.
That sounds like a lot of misinformation. And the third bucket.
The third bucket of criticism focuses on alternative treatments for COVID-19, specifically hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin. These critics are claiming that Dr. Fauci deliberately suppressed information about the effectiveness of these drugs because he wanted to promote the vaccines. They're painting him as a puppet of the pharmaceutical industry, motivated by profit over public health.
So you have these three main lines of attack.
Mm-hmm.
The origins of the virus, the safety and efficacy of the vaccines, and the suppression of alternative treatments. It's a lot to take in, and it can be hard to separate fact from fiction.
It absolutely is. And that's why it's so important to be critical consumers of information,
yeah.
Especially when it comes to highly charged topics like this.
We're going to delve deeper into these criticisms in just a moment. But first, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll explore the evidence, or lack thereof, behind these allegations and discuss how to navigate this complex information landscape. Okay, so we've laid out these serious accusations against Dr. Fauci. Now let's try to untangle them a bit. You mentioned that it's crucial to be critical of the information we're consuming, especially in this hyper-polarized environment. Where do we even begin?
You're absolutely right. It's like walking through a minefield of misinformation. We need to look beyond the headlines and the sound bites and ask ourselves, who's saying this, what evidence do they have, and what might their motives be?
So let's start with the claim that Dr. Fauci funded gain-of-function research that led to the COVID-19 pandemic. That's a pretty explosive allegation. What's the reality there?
Well, it's important to understand that gain-of-function research is a legitimate area of scientific inquiry. Scientists sometimes need to make viruses more transmissible or deadly in a lab setting to understand how they might evolve in the real world and develop effective countermeasures.
So the research itself isn't inherently bad.
Right. It's a tool that can be used for good or bad, like many scientific advancements. The question is whether Dr. Fauci funded research that was conducted recklessly or unethically, and whether that research directly led to the pandemic.
And what does the evidence suggest?
Well, there's no smoking gun. The intelligence community is divided on the origins of the virus, and there's no conclusive proof that it originated in a lab. The World Health Organization investigation was inconclusive as well. There's some circumstantial evidence that needs further investigation, but it's important to separate speculation from fact.
So it's a lot more nuanced than some of the headlines might suggest.
Absolutely. It's easy to get caught up in the sensationalism, but we need to remember that correlation doesn't equal causation. Just because Dr. Fauci funded research at the Wuhan lab doesn't mean that research caused the pandemic.
Okay, so let's move on to the second major criticism, the safety and efficacy of the COVID-19 vaccines. We hear a lot of conflicting information about this, particularly on social media. How do we separate truth from fiction?
Again, it comes back to evaluating the sources and the evidence. The vast majority of credible scientists and public health experts agree that the COVID-19 vaccines are safe and effective. They went through rigorous clinical trials and have been administered to billions of people worldwide.
But some people point to alleged side effects or adverse reactions as proof that the vaccines are dangerous. How do we address those concerns?
It's important to remember that all medical interventions, including vaccines, carry some level of risk. No vaccine is 100% safe or effective. However, the risks associated with the COVID-19 vaccines are extremely low, and the benefits far outweigh the risks.
So the claims that the vaccines are causing widespread harm are unfounded.
The evidence simply doesn't support that. Yes, there have been some rare cases of serious side effects, but these are statistically insignificant compared to the number of people who have been vaccinated safely and effectively.
And what about the claim that Dr. Fauci was pushing these vaccines for personal gain?
That's a serious accusation with no basis, in fact. Dr. Fauci is a public servant who has dedicated his career to public health. There's no evidence to suggest that he has profited from the COVID-19 vaccines in any way.
All right, let's tackle the third major criticism, that Dr. Fauci suppressed information about alternative treatments like hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin.
This is another example of how misinformation can spread like wildfire. Early in the pandemic, there was some hope that these drugs might be effective against COVID-19, but subsequent studies have shown that they are not.
So Dr. Fauci was right to be cautious about endorsing them.
Yes. He was following the scientific evidence, which is constantly evolving. As a scientist and a public health official, his job is to communicate the most accurate and up-to-date information available.
But his critics argue that he deliberately suppressed information to make the vaccines look better by comparison.
That's a conspiracy theory that has been debunked repeatedly. There's no evidence to support it. Dr. Fauci was simply advocating for treatments that were proven to be safe and effective based on the available data.
It seems like there's a tendency to portray Dr. Fauci as some sort of mastermind pulling the strings behind the scenes.
That's right. He's become a convenient scapegoat for people who are angry and distrustful of the government's response to the pandemic. It's easier to blame an individual than to grapple with the complexities of a global health crisis.
And that distrust can be dangerous, especially when it leads people to reject sound medical advice and embrace unproven treatments.
It's a real concern. We've seen how misinformation about COVID-19 has led to vaccine hesitancy and preventable deaths. It's a reminder of the importance of critical thinking and media literacy.
So how do we, as individuals, navigate this information maze? How do we know who to trust?
It's a constant challenge, but here are a few things to keep in mind. First, be wary of information that confirms your existing biases. We all have a tendency to seek out information that reinforces our beliefs. But it's important to be open to different perspectives.
That's good advice.
What else? Pay attention to the source. Is it a reputable news organization, a scientific journal, or a random person on social media? Consider the author's credentials and potential biases.
And if something sounds too good to be true, it probably is.
Exactly. Be skeptical of miracle cures or simple solutions to complex problems. Look for evidence-based information from trusted sources.
It's also important to remember that science is a process, not a destination. What we know today might change tomorrow as new evidence emerges.
That's a crucial point. Science is constantly evolving, and we need to be adaptable in our thinking. Don't be afraid to change your mind when presented with new information.
So in the end, it comes down to being informed, being critical, and being open-minded.
That's the best defense against misinformation, and it's the foundation of a healthy democracy.
All right, so we've unpacked the criticisms against Dr. Fauci and discussed how to be more discerning consumers of information. But where does all of this leave us? What are the larger implications of these debates and controversies for our society?
That's a question worth pondering. We've seen how these issues have fueled division and distrust, not just in our political system, but in our communities as well. And that erosion of trust can have far-reaching consequences.
What do you mean?
Well, think about it. If we can't agree on basic facts, if we can't trust experts, if we're constantly suspicious of each other's motives, how can we possibly address the complex challenges we face as a nation?
That's a sobering thought. So where do we go from here? How do we rebuild trust and bridge these divides?
It's a monumental task, but I believe it starts with dialogue. We need to be willing to listen to each other, even when we disagree.
That's easier said than done in today's polarized climate.
I know, but it's essential. We need to find ways to have respectful conversations, to seek common ground, and to recognize our shared humanity.
And maybe we need to be more forgiving of each other's mistakes.
Perhaps. We all make mistakes, especially in the face of unprecedented challenges like a global pandemic. We need to create a space where it's safe to acknowledge those mistakes and learn from them.
It sounds like we need to shift our focus from winning arguments to finding solutions.
Exactly. We need to move beyond the blame game and work together to create a more just and equitable society.
It's a tall order, but I think it's worth striving for.
I agree. The stakes are too high to give up hope. We need to believe that a better future is possible and work together to make it a reality.
And on that hopeful note, let's wrap up this deep dive. But before we go, I want to leave our listeners with one final thought. We've covered a lot of ground today. From the unprecedented idea of preemptive pardons to the intense scrutiny surrounding Dr. Fauci. As we wrap up, I keep coming back to this idea of trust, or rather, the lack of it.
Yeah, it's like a crack running through the foundation of our society. We see it in the political arena, where hyper-partisanship makes compromise nearly impossible. We see it in the spread of misinformation, where people are more likely to believe what aligns with their existing beliefs, even if it's not supported by evidence. And we see it in the attacks on figures like Dr. Fauci,
right,
where expertise itself is being questioned and undermined.
I think what's really striking about the Dr. Fauci situation is that it's not just a disagreement over policy or even ideology.
Mm.
It feels like something much deeper, a rejection of the very idea of scientific authority.
It's almost as if we've entered an era of alternative facts,
yeah,
where everyone has their own version of reality, and those versions are increasingly difficult to reconcile. This makes it incredibly challenging to have productive conversations about complex issues, let alone find solutions.
So what does this all mean for the average person trying to navigate this landscape? It feels overwhelming, to say the least.
It absolutely can be. But I think there are a few things we can all do to be more informed and engaged citizens. First, we need to be aware of our own biases. We all have them, and they can color our perceptions in subtle but powerful ways.
So being more self-aware is a good starting point. What else can we do?
We need to be more critical of the information we consume. Ask yourself, who's presenting this information? What's their agenda? What evidence are they basing their claims on? And are they presenting a balanced view? Or are they cherry-picking facts to support a particular narrative?
Right. It's like becoming our own fact-checkers, which can feel like a full-time job in today's information overload.
It does take effort, but it's crucial. Another important step is to diversify our information sources. Don't rely on just one news outlet or social media platform. Seek out different perspectives, even those you might disagree with.
That can be uncomfortable, but it's probably the best way to get a more complete picture.
Exactly. It's about challenging our own assumptions and being open to the possibility that we might be wrong. And finally, I think it's important to remember that we're all in this together.
What do you mean by that?
We all have a stake in the health of our democracy, and that means working together to find solutions, even when it's hard. It means having difficult conversations, listening to each other, and finding common ground. It means recognizing that we have more in common than what divides us.
That sounds idealistic, but I think you're right. If we give in to cynicism and despair, then those who seek to divide us win.
Hope is not naive. It's a necessary act of defiance in these times. We have to believe that a better future is possible. We have to work together to make it happen.
I think that's a perfect note to end on. This deep dive has been heavy, but it's essential to understand these complex issues if we want to navigate the road ahead. As always, we encourage you to continue exploring these topics, to seek out diverse perspectives, and to engage in thoughtful dialogue, even when it's difficult. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive, and we'll see you next time.